podcasting from Nashville, Tennessee. This is Keep Asking, the podcast that helps you dig deeper and wider into the research providing insights into today's church and culture. I'm here today with my colleague, Scott McConnell, and welcome back to another one of our colleagues, Carol Pipes. Hello, everyone.
Hey.
So today we're going to be talking with Carol and Scott about the about research, not just about our data, but research process for journalists, the perspective of in communications and journalism. And so, but to kick off, Carol, remind our listeners, our very loyal listeners, about your role and your titles here at Lifeway.
All right. I am Director of Corporate Communications for Lifeway and Editor-in-Chief of Facts and Trends.
Also, our listeners may not know that Carol comes from some pretty famous roots. Tell us a little bit about, you're from Tullahoma, Tennessee, correct?
I am from Tullahoma, Tennessee.
Now, Tullahoma has some pretty famous claims to fame, at least one.
Yes.
What is it?
Tullahoma is the home of the world's largest wind tunnel.
And
I know you get such a kick out of that.
I am so, because you talk about it with such great pride,
yes,
that I think it's important.
I'm very proud.
Have you ever been in this wind tunnel?
I have been in the wind tunnel. They used to do family tour days.
Oh, wow.
That seems dangerous.
So I feel like
leave
I
your
should
toupee at home.
I feel like I should explain. So there is an Air Force base in Tullahoma. And along with this Air Force base, there is a research and development center there called Arnold Engineering Development Center. And that is where my father worked all of his career as an aerospace engineer. And he specifically did wind tunnel testing. Pretty much anything in the military that's flying today, planes as well as missiles.
Mm-hmm.
My dad did the wind tunnel testing on that.
No, you've never thrown in that part.
Yes. So he's a pretty amazing guy. Very smart. Very good at math. We grew up hearing the phrase quite often, it's all physics, because my dad loves physics. So his answer for everything is, it's physics. But yeah, there would be family days where they would allow the people who work there to bring their families and take tours of
awesome.
The facility. So I have been in the world's largest wind tunnel. And I have also seen the machine that spits out dead chickens at airplane windshields and engines so that they can test those.
Oh, test them. Wow.
Yes.
That's
amazing. Do they shoot out? I don't want to know if real chickens are used. Please don't answer because...
Are some of them frozen?
No.
No, they're
no,
all like...
No, okay. You can't use frozen. As a matter of fact, my dad has a great story about, I believe it was the Germans that he worked very closely with an aerospace group in Germany. And it was either the Germans or the French. I can't remember now. But they had one of these guns. It's a giant, like, gun thing that spits out chickens. And they get a lot of data from this. I mean, it's important because you want to know how is your engine going to react if, like, a large bird or something flies into the engine.
Chickens don't fly too often. They can.
They're large birds.
The chicken attack. Our plane was taken today on the podcast. We're learning about how our Air Force protects planes being taken down by chicken attacks.
Still, it's an important test. I'm telling you.
It is important.
It's an important test.
I heard that, but I would not have caught that if Scott hadn't said it.
But one of these other companies had started using this similar contraption to test with, and they were getting data quite different from the data they were getting in Tullahoma. And they realized they were using frozen chickens as opposed
to thawed.
It's
a lot faster. You swing by the grocery store,
so,
launch, there it is.
They had to remind
probably
them,
a lot more damage
hey,
to the engine.
Thaw the chickens before you do it. So, yeah.
That's good data. That's a good data story. I like that, Carol. That's good.
It is true. That
is a good. So I have to know. So would they?
You guys should really have my father on this podcast. I think he would enjoy.
I'm all about it because it's good research. So are they at least deceased birds before they put them in the machine?
Of course.
Okay. That's just what I needed because I didn't want people picketing and protesting.
And it's a launcher, not a gun.
Right. It's a launcher. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Where would we
be
in this interview? All right. So Scott.
Scott's telling us to move along.
But I demand that none of this be caught
up. But I could talk about Tullahoma and wind tunnels all day long.
But this is important because what we're talking about is research. This is a perfect introduction for
what we're doing. Yes.
Is the value of research in someone's career endeavor and what is important. And I mean, this is a perfectly planned out introduction.
True.
And as we talk with Carol about journalism and communications and the value of your research process.
Yes.
In another podcast, we talked to you a little bit about how you work with us on the communications team with our research and data.
Yes.
But also journalists, writers, you have a research process and the value of kind of going out there and, you know, not just making it up, if you will.
Exactly.
So tell us a little bit about how you think of you as a writer, when you're approaching a story, your research process.
Right. So depending on the topic, there are a lot of different areas of research that you can do. If we're doing a study on a particular research topic, of course, we're going to go and try to find every bit of research that has been done on that particular topic in the past. So whether that's library research, or you may go and look and see if Pew Research has done a similar study, or Gallup, or PRRI. I mean, there are a lot of different research firms out there. And many times you can find similar studies done on the same topic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really good resource for a journalist to go and look and see, okay, what are different questions that have been asked before about this particular topic? What are the findings from those different studies? What are the similarities from the studies? And what are the contrasts from the different studies? That really can help inform your writing to go and look and see what has been asked and what has been answered in the past. Also, it's great to go and find experts about a particular topic and talk to them about their experience with that topic to really speak into the story that you're writing. We'll also go and try to find anecdotes that help tell the story of that particular topic. And there's a lot of different ways you can find those personal examples to help strengthen your story.
So once you have a story idea, what keeps you from just cherry picking or proof texting to tell that story the way you wanted to, your original idea?
Right.
So whether it's a data source or an interview, what keeps you from just kind of grabbing the pieces that agree with what you already thought?
I would say journalistic integrity would keep you from cherry picking different things that help support your topic. And I think it really helps an article if you show two different sides of a story, something that maybe doesn't necessarily back up whatever it is that you're trying to say. I think that it strengthens the piece if you can tell both sides of something.
That makes a lot of sense, because I think a lot of people question journalistic integrity, even though they may not know those words,
right?
Because they don't agree with what they read,
right?
Whereas if they're hearing both sides, even if it's pretty obvious from the data or from the stories that one side might be a little better,
right?
That's it seems like that accusation couldn't hold up as much.
True. Yeah. So, yeah, I think anytime you can tell both sides of a story, that helps strengthen a piece.
When you mentioned like going to experts, how do you know when you have talked to enough experts or you've gotten kind of the full picture of, okay, I'm getting the full story? You may not write about the full story, but you know you've gotten enough. Is
right.
it an intuition? Is it a balance? What are your personal markers?
Gosh, that is a great question. And a lot of times that's a challenge for a writer when you get so much information. And a lot of times you get really great information. But there's usually no possible way you can get all of that into an article. I think it's always good to get multiple input from multiple people. So if you can get three or four folks that you can talk to, experts, and pull that information into a story, that's really great. But oftentimes, as a writer, you can have pages and pages and pages of notes that help inform your piece, but you don't use it's different for every writer, right. But you're not going to be able to use all of that information that you've pulled.
Well, and that, it's funny that you say that because I'm just thinking I could never be a writer like your team is doing, because what I have to do when I'm writing reports, Scott knows that's kind of the hardest thing to kind of pull out of me, like to get that finished report, because you're going through and you see so much good stuff. So sometimes the way I do it to give myself permission not to put it in is I'm boiling it down to these are the core points. But then if what do they need to know? What's the most helpful to know? And then all this other stuff I store and say, okay, this is over here if I had to defend it. And sometimes that's the thing. If I just tell myself, if they need more information, I know this, you know, is this self-explanatory? Can they run with this? But then I have to give myself permission to say it's enough that I know this and I know I can defend it.
Right.
Because a lot of times you're like, this is really great stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And then.
Oh, yeah. It's really hard when you've talked to a lot of different people and gotten great information from all of them. And there's just no way you can put it all into the story. And that's really when you have to start thinking about your reader. Who is your audience and what is going to be the most important information for them? And a lot of times that will help inform the writer as to what they need to put in the article and what they can leave out. And you can always say, hey, I'll write a second story, you know, on down the road, and I've got all this content I can use.
Right.
So one example would be if you're writing, say, a profile of someone, whether it might be a pastor or a missionary. I got my start writing as a freelancer, writing profiles of missionaries who live in North America. And I always talk to them, of course, to do the profile, but tried to talk to other people who know them and work with them on a daily basis. And obviously, I'm not going to be able to get all of that information that I've been told into that piece, but it definitely helps inform and helps paint a picture of that person. So yeah, it's always good to have more information than what you'll actually put into a piece.
Scott, you were going to ask something?
How often does the premise of the entire story change once you get into doing the research? So you think you're going to write going one direction, and as you're collecting data, as you're interviewing folks, the whole direction of the story shifts.
That is a great question. And it does happen periodically. You can get into, you have a particular topic that you're wanting to do, and you start interviewing folks, and then you realize, oh, wow, there's another story here that maybe is more compelling or might fit your audience better. And so you shift. And probably a good example of that as far as something for Facts and Trends, one of our writers, our senior writer, Bob Smetana, came to us, the editors, with an idea, or came to our team in one of our editorial meetings with the idea of doing a story on opioid addiction in the Bible Belt. And of course, that has been in the news a lot lately. He actually came to us and pitched that story before it really started making a lot of news. So he's been talking about doing this for almost 2 years now. And wanting to do the story. And so last year he took a trip to Appalachia and spent some time with pastors and ministry leaders in that area and discovered kind of a different story. I mean, yes, there was definitely they do have that challenge. And he actually wrote about one particular church that has a ministry to people who have drug addiction. Wonderful church that he was able to feature, and how they're helping people through the ministry at the church to get set free from that drug addiction. But while he was working on that story, he discovered another story that is going to wind up being the cover story for the fall issue of Facts and Trends. And it's about the hidden mission field in North America and how so much of rural America is unchurched. And we think a lot of times as rural America being very churched. And the latest census statistics and some of the other research that he's found has kind of debunked that. Mm. And so he is working on a cover story about different places in rural America and churches and how they're trying to reach the unchurched in their communities. So, yeah, that definitely happens.
That sounds compelling. Yeah. And it's, mm-hmm. you know, anytime a story comes from, kind of bubbles up from the sources, that almost has an extra oomph to it.
Right.
That's good.
Yeah.
And so stories like this are available at factsandtrends.net.
Correct. Yes.
All three words jammed together, facts and trends.
Yep. Spell it all out.
And definitely appreciate stories like that tell the story of data, but also, as you mentioned, have a focus on your listeners. So make bringing things to action. Mm-hmm. And that seems really applicable anytime somebody's telling a story with data, whether it's in print or verbally.
Right.
To bring it to their listener in an actionable way. What can somebody do with this?
Yeah. I think if you can put flesh and blood on a stat and show a real person, that really makes a difference to the reader. That there's a better connection there if you can tell a personal story rather than just rattling off numbers.
Just like if you can put flesh and blood on a chicken and throw it at an airplane windshield,
yes,
you have the numbers that tell you about that, but then you also have the actual, you can say this was a real thing that happened.
Correct.
And so it, yes. It's...
Thank you for tying our story back.
But chicken or not, chickens are not people.
Right.
That's true.
Exactly. Yes. So, but just wanting to, you know, tie that so that everyone knows this was a very well, tightly planned podcast interview, yes, from beginning to
obviously
end. Yes. So we do want to thank everyone for listening. And Carol, we want you back. This is really good. And I've got questions I didn't get to ask.
Oh,
so there's more
fun
that we need to do later. So,
okay. That's great.
If you have any questions, now talking to the listeners, Carol, I don't want you asking questions right now. But listeners, please tweet to us at SMCon, at Carol Pipes.
Go
ahead.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, when are you going to write your cover story for us that we've been asking for?
Oh, really?
I'd rather like
not have
years.
That on air. So we'll discuss that off air.
Sorry.
At Lizette Tweets. And join us next time for an episode of Keep Asking, where our interviewee will not have such a rebellious spirit and try and show me up. But keep asking, learn more, do better.